Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Well, the Syrian military, along with its Russian partners, are on the move as more territory is reclaimed from rebels in the country. The latest region is the Dara area, where terrorists have been turning in heavy weapons, and they either will reconcile with the government or be taken to the northern part of the country. This as the Syrian army inches closer to the Golan Heights region. Stay with us as we take a look at all of this on this debate. We're going to start it off and cross over to Damascus, joined by our correspondent on the ground there, Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali, great to have you with us. Well, please fill us in the latest situation on the ground there.
Yes, the Syrian army continues to rapidly secure more and more areas in Syria's south, whether in Al-Quneitra or in Daraa. The army is now in control of over 80 to 85% of Daraa itself, and has started, after securing many areas west of Daraa, to advance and start taking control of areas in Al-Quneitra province itself, which is on the separation line with the occupied Golan Heights over there. The army took control and entered into Mashara, a very strategic town in the eastern countryside of Al-Quneitra itself, the first town that the Syrian army enters militarily inside Al-Quneitra province. This town is actually important and strategic because it is surrounded by strategic hilltops, about five hilltops, mostly with the terrorist groups. The town has been under the control of terrorists since 2013 when they first occupied it, but now it is under the control of the Syrian army. Surrounded by those strategic hilltops, the Syrian army is aiming to take control of those hilltops in order to have more actually hand on those terrorist groups and the areas they control in Al-Quneitra, which, of course, the areas that the terrorists are in control of Al-Quneitra province is about 70%, a very large area that those terrorists control. Mashara was under the control of the Al-Nusra Front, also Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. The army is actually interpreting what the Syrian government officials have been saying recently, which is liberating every inch of Syrian territory. And this is being interpreted actually on the ground. In June, the army started its military offensive just last month, and in a very short period of time, the army has been controlling tens of square kilometers and doesn't seem to be actually stopping or aiming to stop until securing every inch, until reaching that separation line with, of course, the occupied Golan, taking into consideration that the army has closed the border crossings that terrorists use for years for infiltration from Jordan.
Thank you so much for that update out of Damascus. Appreciate you being with us, Muhammad Ali. I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of London, editor-in-chief of theduran.com, Mr. Alex Markaras, and out of Washington, D.C., professor of George Washington University, Mr. Nabil Michal. Thanks so much for being with us. We're going to start this off in D.C. with Nabil. Well, the Syrian military has been on the move during the last few weeks, especially, and have taken back a lot of Syrian territory, which had been in the hands of terrorists for years. What do you think has happened that we're seeing the Syrian military achieve victory after victory more and more in a shorter period of time?
It means that the Syrian army had the upper hand. They were stronger, militarily speaking, than their opponents. So what would follow, I would assume, would be known in the police vocabulary as street combing, basically cleaning up the mess that resulted from 6-7 years of fighting in an internal strife that should have ended a long time ago. They will capture a lot of their opponents. They will also try to establish ties with the local population and fight terrorism, since there is an infiltration of so many terrorist elements in the Syrian civil war. But the most important message is to be patient, since tomorrow will be the Helsinki summit between the Russian President Putin and his American counterpart, Trump. And I'm quite sure they will discuss Syria seriously. They will talk about the recent movements of the Syrian armed forces in southern Syria. So I'm quite sure that a lot of factors will be analyzed, digested, and perhaps the political clout of the whole operation could be weaved tomorrow, and we can hear some important stuff about what has been transpiring over the past couple of weeks.
All right, stay with me. I want to get back to you on what you said, Nabil, but first let me cross over to London and get Alex in on this conversation. What does it mean for the Israeli regime that the Syrian military is reclaiming more of their land, and especially in the Daraa region, close to the Golan Heights?
I think it means the failure of Israeli policy in Syria. I mean, the Israelis have operated various different policies during the Syrian war. I think that they were always very keen to see regime change in Syria. I think they saw Syria as the weak point in the coalition of enemies, as Israel calls it, what's sometimes referred to as the axis of resistance, bringing together Hezbollah, Syria, Iran, perhaps Iraq too. It saw Syria as the weak part of this. It wanted to fight to overthrow the government of Syria. When that became less likely, I think the Israelis wanted to create buffer zones around Israeli occupied territories in the Golan Heights. It looks like that isn't going to succeed either. So the Israelis are now facing the complete failure of their Syrian policy. It is a major strategic defeat for them, and they're going to have to think very carefully what their options are in this situation, if they don't want to get themselves drawn into an even more bigger struggle, which could be dangerous for Israel and could turn out even worse for them.
Well, Nabil, what does it mean for Syria to have the Daraa area totally liberated, basically from the Jordanian border to the Golan Heights?
Immense changes and many important implications. And I have to be selective. First of all, the regime now is being discussed as a factor in any transition period because, quote unquote, it dominates most of the Syrian lands, including the soil where the rebellion started, meaning al-Dir'a and its surroundings. Second, it also implies that somehow Russia will be mediating officially and secretly between the Israelis and the Syrians to make that area more or less tranquil. Of course, that's a very relative expression, but we will not see too much hostilities emanating from that area. Thirdly, it also will raise questions about the American role in Syria. You can also ask this important question: why couldn't America finish off its job quicker and more decisively than what the Russians and the Syrians did? But let us just avoid this question momentarily and ask the question: what is the future of the American forces deployed in Syria as a result of the capture of al-Dir'a over the past couple of days? Again, I said in my answer to your first question, these issues could be discussed tomorrow at the Helsinki summit. I do not know how much details Putin and Trump will talk about it, but at least it could outline their strategic conversation. So the most important thing now is that you have a strategic dialogue about Syria, and that was missing for years from the American side, especially during the Obama administration. If you have a serious talk about Syria, this could help establish peace and end the civil war.
Okay, well, Alex, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has said the victories are due to the resilience of the Syrian military and its will to liberate all Syrian territories. The significance of this statement, when it wasn't really that long ago, that much of Syria was still in the hands of terrorists from all over the world.
I'm very glad you've raised this question, actually, because I think that we should never forget that the people who have done most of the fighting in Syria and who are winning the war in Syria is the Syrian military, the Syrian army. It has held together, Syria has held together in the face of quite extraordinary pressure. They held out to the point where eventually, as we both know, the Russians and others came to their rescue. But the point is, they held out that long. President Assad himself remained in Damascus. He didn't flee Damascus. He didn't go abroad, as some people, I think, thought he might. So the Syrians have held out. Not only have they held out, but now they've been able to go back on the offensive. And they've been able to go up on the offensive in Daraa and in Quneitra. Let's be very clear about it. You said at the beginning, with the Russians, my impression is it is largely themselves now. They are doing nearly all the fighting, not just on the ground, but also in the air. The Russians are helping more with negotiating ceasefires than involving themselves directly in the fighting. So it is the Syrian military that is winning this war. And I think one has to make a further political observation, which is a very important one. It would not be able to win this war if it did not have the support of the Syrian people. When places like Daraa are liberated, I use that word because that is, I think, the correct and accurate word, the Syrian army is able to restore peace to places like Daraa when the people, who let us correctly call them terrorists, leave. And that is a sign that the Syrian army and the Syrian government has the support of the Syrian people in this war.
Let me get Nabil's perspective on what you just said, Alex. Nabil, what do you think about what our guest there has just said about that it shows with the liberation of Daraa and other places, the actual support on the ground for the Syrian government and the Syrian military?
Look, this could be true to a great deal of extent, but in this case, you have to monitor the Syrian public opinion over a period of 7 years. I would assume, although I'm not a student of that issue and it perhaps needs further study, I would say that there was a track record whereby Assad was very unpopular at the beginning. After the fighting, after the disruption, after the agonies of the civil war, more and more people from Syria became conservative. They opted for a stability, for a centrist role for the government, whether they liked it or not. So I would assume that the majority, even if it is a slim majority in Syria now, favors a continuation of the government in Damascus. However, with serious changes, that could really render the calls for change that the revolution espoused true. Like, for instance, now we're talking about the transition period. I would assume that Russia would agree with America to keep Bashar al-Assad for a while. But at the same time, there will be movements to change the regime. I do not think that the two sides would agree to a quick holding of elections, because you have 6 million refugees that need to be resettled and first come back. So I would assume the public opinion in Syria reflects a conservative mood, a great deal of agony and worries that the country should not be dismembered anymore. And again, how can you capitalize on it? Get Putin and Trump to agree on it and move the peace process forward.
What about that, Alex? As our guest said, he said that he felt that the majority of Syrians were initially against the government, but because of becoming conservative, that actually then they started supporting the government. Your take on and what has taken place in the 7 years? Because go ahead.
Yeah, my own view is certainly there was dissatisfaction with many aspects of life in Syria, as there is in most countries. But in my opinion, also, the war that we have seen in Syria was to a very great extent a foreign orchestrated war. I have no doubt about that. If we look at the situation in the Middle East, we had a whole coalition of countries, Israel, the United States, Saudi Arabia, the other Gulf monarchies, Jordan. They were all involved, Turkey. They were all involved in trying to overthrow the government of Bashar al-Assad and the government of Syria. And they failed. And the reason they failed was because at the end of the day, the people of Syria decided that they preferred to have decisions about who governs Syria decided in Syria by the Syrian people themselves. And I think that is what ultimately caused them to rally around the government. I think another factor caused them to rally around the government, and that is how President Bashar al-Assad himself acted throughout the war. I have no doubt at all that by staying in Damascus, by giving leadership to his military, by pursuing an active and successful diplomacy, by being prepared to negotiate at various times, I have no doubt at all that he has enhanced very greatly the opinion that the Syrian people have of him, whatever concerns they might once have had before the war started.
Well, Nabil, what about this? At one point in time during these 7 years, we saw Western countries even had created a new flag for the Syrian opposition and basically said that the government of Assad was basically over, would be overthrown. And now we're here. Now this. Do you think that a lot of those countries, those Western countries especially, who supported the overthrow of President al-Assad, are now actually willing to basically change the way that they deal with Syria? Are we going to see a continuation of their aggressive ways against Damascus?
This is a long story, and it's an important question, because you have to tell the whole story of the struggle over change in Syria. But I read an article in the American conservative magazine that said that when arming the Syrian opposition was initiated, a lot of weapons were bought from Serbia. And you have to realize that Serbia is an ally of Russia. It's a neighbor to Croatia that just lost the World Cup now. So I believe that there was some sort of an open market for ideas, for material, for leaders, for so many personas who were basically engulfed somehow into the process and the zeal to change the regime in Syria. You have to realize that the change in Syria came on the wheels of the Arab Spring phenomenon, and you are seeing some sort of a domino effect. Mubarak falls, the leader of Tunisia is falling, you are talking about who would be next. So the question is, why didn't the Assad regime fall? The question should be formulated differently. What factors propelled its resiliency? That was due to many factors, including the Russian intervention, but also there was a gradual change in the American position. So I believe that Syria was an open market for everyone who bid for change. Now the bidding process is very expensive and not lucrative, so I think it will be confined to some wheeling and dealing between Moscow and Washington, and this how can you can settle the affairs in Damascus.
Alex, has the resilience of the Syrian army and its allies opened up a new paradigm in the region?
Yes, I think it has, because, I mean, this is the first time that an Arab state has managed to withstand this kind of attack. Other states have been subjected to similar attacks, and they failed. Syria held together. Now, it didn't hold together by itself. It had its allies. It had Iran, it had Russia. But I mean, if we talk about Russia, one of the reasons the Russians became involved is that by 2015, they themselves have started to change their assessment, not just of the situation in Syria, but about President Assad. At the beginning, they had doubts about him. By 2015, those doubts had started to be dispelled. So I think one has to say this. Syria has held together, and it has held remarkably well together. And I think that it is a mistake to think that the future of Syria is going to be decided in Helsinki, in meetings between President Putin and President Trump. I think what we have seen over the last couple of years is that the people who will decide the fate of Syria are the Syrians themselves, and that anyone else who tries to change that picture is going to fail in their attempt to do so.
Well, Nabil, your take on it. Do you think that victory is on the horizon for the Syrian people?
It depends on how you define victory. I mean, the Syrians have suffered a great deal. The nation basically collapsed. There are 6 to 7 million people who were forced into exile. If they come back and live comfortably, this will be a victory for me. I do not know how others will.
What about victory in
victory.
Totally?
This is a very
what about
subjective
victory
process.
Meaning? What about victory meaning totally getting rid of terrorists in their country, taking their land, their sovereign land back, and out of the hands of terrorists? Even before we get to the other aspects, of course, which will have to come, do you not think that that would be step one, and that would be a very, very important one?
It will be very important, but you have to tell me the figures. How many people have you captured among the terrorist ranks? How much, like for instance, I read a story yesterday, I cannot recall its source, but it said that ISIL fighters are aggregating toward the borders with Jordan. So you have to eradicate them. If they are still operating from Syria, you have to stop them from infiltrating Jordan. So you have to establish the criteria for declaring victory. It's a very subjective process.
Okay. Alex, your take, same question.
Well, I mean, the short answer is that if Syria does complete the military operations and restore control of its territory and drive out the people we've called terrorists, and I personally have no doubt that is going to happen, we are now in the end game, then that is a victory, and it is an immense and important victory. What the Syrian people eventually decide their state should be like, as I said, is a matter for them. But they have withstood this concerted attack upon themselves. That is a huge event in Middle East and indeed in world history. And of course, if one looks at the Middle East and the situation in the Middle East, if we look at, we were talking about Israel at the start of the program. We could talk about Palestine, we could talk about Lebanon, we could talk about all sorts of places. The victory of Syria is going to have important consequences.
And on that note, I'm so sorry I have to interrupt you because we're at the end of the program, but I appreciate both our guests being with us. Alex McCurdis, editor-in-chief of the Duran.com out of London. Nabil Mikhail, Professor George Washington University out of Washington, D.C. I'd like to thank you viewers for being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.